by. Good day, everyone, and welcome, and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, What's New with NetView for ZOS, a whole new release. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, you'll learn about the important functions and the new release of NetView for ZOS version 5.3. The speaker for today's teleconference is Larry Green, software architect, IBM Tivoli NetView for ZOS development. At this time, I'd like to hand it over to our speaker, Larry Green.
Okay, well, good morning or good afternoon, depending on where you are. I'm glad to be with you today. I want to spend a few minutes talking with you about the latest NetView release. So let's get started. On slide 2, what's the latest? Well, there's a whole new release. NetView 5.3 became generally available a couple of months ago on July 27th. On slide 3, as you can see, we'll talk about some of the major focus areas in this release. IP management, more use of the Tivoli Enterprise Portal, product integration, enhancements in several core functions, and I have some pointers to additional sources of information for you. Going to slide 4, IP management, we're continuing more than a decade of consistent growth in NetView's IP management capabilities, and NetView 5.3 brings more new and enhanced IP functions. So we'll start with Enterprise Extender. On slide 5, for EE, there are a couple of new functions, and let's start with identifying EE sessions. Going to slide 6, a NetView operator uses the NLDM SES command to list SNA sessions that meet various criteria. Until now, you had to specify the session endpoints. With NetView 5.3, the SES command is enhanced to allow selection of sessions that pass through a given resource, not necessarily an endpoint. We expect one common usage will be to see what sessions traverse a given adjacent link station, or ALS, as our customers who use Enterprise Extender have requested. Several commands are affected, primarily the NLDM SES command, but also the NLDM SESM GET and the NA SESM G commands, both of which provide front ends for SES. So let's take a look at SES now. On the next slide, SES has a new keyword. It's ActRef. And so here we're asking for all sessions that have SEPACP as one of their endpoints and pass through CNR00004. And going to the next slide, here we have the results. We see a list of all sessions that have SEPACP as one endpoint and traverse CNR00004 as we requested. Selecting one of those, and we'll pick the first one, we can see the configuration information for that session. On the next slide, here's the configuration information for the selected session. This, combined with the information that we'll see in the next section on more information about paths to session partners, provides significant management capability for EE sessions and helps you to understand the association of SNA sessions with underlying EE connections. So let's go on now to that next section. Slide 10 will now go into more information about paths to session partners. On slide 11, to debug a session problem, the typical user begins with an LU name and investigates where breakage or congestion is occurring. Usually, this LU is inboard or locally known, meaning it's defined to this host's VTAM. Sometimes the LU is outboard, it's a DLUR. The user might issue the dis command to get started and display LU status. So we've added a new path keyword to provide additional EE-related information when it's available. Going to slide 12, more path information. If the LU is EE connected, then the basic information provided by the dis command is supplemented Additional information is gathered about the path to the resource, and that's appended. For an outboard resource, information is provided about the path to the CP that owns the resource, assuming that both hosts are at ZOS 1.7 or later. A DNET EEDIAG test is run, and the test results are appended. If NetView is active at the remote CP, and that remote command is enabled and authorized, then RTP pipe information from the remote host is also appended. If the resource is inboard, then data from a trace route for the resource is also appended. So let's take a look at some of this. Going to the next slide, here we have the output from a DIS path command. It's presented in a NetView window, so it's scrollable and searchable. The LU that we asked about is shown at the top, and as we'll see, it's an outboard resource. Here we see things like its switch major node, its associated PU, and other information about it. We see that this session is going over an HPR pipe, and we have information about the adjacent link station, its status, the TCID, and so on. So going to the next slide, because the designated resource is an outboard resource, and NetView is active at that remote CP, and that remote command is enabled and authorized, we have RTP information. So we can see the live time for this connection, the line it's connected to, when the EE connection was activated, some transmission statistics, and other information. And at the bottom, we see the start of the traceroute results. So going on to slide 15 now, here's the rest of the traceroute results, along with information about the PU that's associated with our LU, and the EEDIAG results. Going to slide 16, now an enhancement to packet filtering. This is on slide 17 now. Formatted packet traces were introduced via a new function PTF in NetView 5.1. Filtering by local or remote IP address or port, time range, interface, and other criteria is already available. Added to that now is the ability to filter by protocol. This is implemented via a new parameter called protocol, logically enough, on the packets and format packet commands. The protocol can be specified as a number, 0 through 255, or one of three names, TCP, UDP, or OSPF, and can be used in conjunction with other criteria. This very granular filtering allows you to deal with only the packets that are of interest to you. Going to slide 18 now, this display is from the Tivoli Enterprise portal. And here we entered the format packet command with the protocol parameter to display only UDP packets. The data is also available in NetView's 3270 console, and it's a similar display there. Okay, looking at slide 19 and going on, let's have a look at identifying hung listeners. And this is on slide 20. We define a hung listener as a port that refuses connections, but it looks like it's active or normal, and it shows up as such in response to a netstat command. Well, currently, users have no way of proactively monitoring for and managing hung listeners. System administrators only find out that a listener is hung when a user calls in complaining that an application is unavailable. Going to the next slide now. This new function provides an API and definitions to allow for monitoring critical ports using timers for the customer-defined monitor interval. When a port is found to be hung, an automatable message is issued to allow for recovery. If the port is not hung, the connection is ended. Then, regardless of whether or not the port is hung, each timer is then reset for the next interval. The name of the command is CNMETSTL, with test port as a more rememberable synonym. It can be invoked manually or more likely through automation. If you know up front that you will want to monitor one or more particular ports, you can define monitoring parameters for each port in the NetView style sheet, CNM style. If the command is invoked with no parameters, then these style sheet definitions are used. And as I mentioned, it results in an automatable message to allow you to take some action to correct the problem. Going on to slide 22, we'll take a look now at more TCP connection information. Slide 23, NetView 5.2 was the first release to provide information on TCP connections. Information for active connections is greatly expanded now in NetView 5.3 with the use of ZOS ComServer's new Network Management Interface, or NMI. A new keyword, Query Act, is provided on the TCP con command, and we'll take a look at that output. A new minor keyword, job name, is also provided to allow filtering on the basis of the application address space name. Connection information is available for display in either the Tivoli Enterprise portal or the NetView 3270 console. For 3270 displays, the CNMS TCPC sample C list formats the output for readability and allows you to customize the display if you want to. The handling of data for inactive connections is unchanged. So going to the next slide, as I mentioned, Query Act is the new keyword on the TCP con command. You can further filter active connections by other criteria, as shown on this slide, so you can examine only the connections that you're interested in. Now going to slide 25, this screenshot comes from the Tivoli Enterprise portal and shows that for active connections, you now have available the local and remote address and port, the date and time when the connection started, the date and time of last activity, the job name of the address space that opened the socket, the connection ID, bytes sent and received over the connection, the number of segments sent or received or retransmitted, and a lot more information as well. Okay, going on, we've added additional IPv6 support, and on slide 27, NetView 5.2 added toleration for IPv6, that is, it handles IPv6 addresses and messages and most other display contexts and in some internal services, but it was limited in some other areas. For example, the use of IPv6 addresses as command input. Release 5.3 now extends NetView support for IPv6 to include most all contexts, including command support, other internal services, and so on. Support for IPv6 in the few remaining areas where it's not yet covered will be provided by the end of the year. Now, we know that most non-government customers are not yet using or even exploring IPv6, but when you get there, NetView will be ready for you. One notable function to mention here is the Trap to Alert service. This function has been available through NetView's Event Automation Service, or EAS, and it is still available there. But NetView 5.3 introduces a new Trap to Alert service that's implemented as a base NetView function. It can be used in place of the EAS Trap to Alert, meaning that there's no need for EAS and the associated USS setup. It's enabled for IPv6, and like the EAS function, it supports SNMP v1. But it also supports SNMP v2 and v3, which a number of customers have asked for. So going on now, we'll take a look at the Tivoli Enterprise portal. And going to slide 29, NetView data was initially available in the Tivoli Enterprise Portal with NetView 5.2. With that release, the NetView TEP agent required the use of a distributed box, Windows or AIX or Linux or something like that. The NetView 5.3 agent, which we call our Enterprise Management Agent, runs on ZOS, thus simplifying your management environment since there's no longer a need for the distributed agent. Going to slide 30 now. I mentioned that NetView 5.2 was the first release to provide data in the TEP, with workspaces for formatted packet traces, DeviPA data, session data, and more. NetView 5.3 provides additional data with new and expanded workspaces. We provide 28 situations out of the box, and in addition to online help, expert advice is available for all of those situations. We'll take a look at some of the NetView workspaces, but first just a reminder of what a situation is. A situation describes a condition or set of conditions that you want to examine to determine if a potential problem exists in the systems and resources you're monitoring. A condition consists of an attribute, a predefined value, and a comparison operator. When a situation is activated, the attribute is compared to the predefined value to determine if the condition is met. For example, a situation could check to see whether the CPU percentage attribute is greater than or equal to the predefined value of 10%. You can create complex situations that contain multiple conditions, allowing you to examine multiple attributes that represent characteristics of specific problems. When all of the conditions of a situation are met, then an event is registered. The operator is alerted to events by indicator icons that appear in the navigation tree. So now let's go and take a look at some of the NetView workspaces. And I'm on slide 31. The stack configuration and status workspace provides information about the ZOS ComServer stacks. The table at the bottom shows basic configuration information for each stack, such as the job name and host name, its status, the primary interface name, and so on. The graphic at the top shows the number of stacks in each status, and in this case, they're all active. The data in this workspace is real-time and is updated when either the status of your Sysplex changes or the status of your TCP/IP stack changes. Going to slide 32 now, at the left end of each row is a link for that stack. Clicking on one of those links will take us to the DeviPA definition and status workspace that's associated with that stack, as we'll see on the next slide. So going to slide 33 now. This workspace displays the configuration and status information about DeviPA connections for the stack we selected on the previous workspace. So looking at the first row, we see, for example, the address for that DeviPA, its origin and status, its mobility, its distributor status, and more information about it. Going to slide 34. Here we have the active TCP connections workspace again. We saw this workspace a few slides back, but I'll go into more detail about it here. We selected this workspace from the navigation tree. The workspace itself is not new. As I mentioned, it first appeared in NetView 5.2, but as I've mentioned, it's greatly expanded in NetView 5.3. In addition to the new data that's available, there are several panes with filtered information to help with problem identification. The graphic at the top center shows connections whose percent segments retransmitted is greater than or equal to 3%. And in this case, there are none. The graphic at the center left shows connections where the byte rate is greater than or equal to 1024. And there are several here. The table at center right shows connections where bytes sent or received equals zero. All of these thresholds are customizable, as are the type of display, table or graphics, and the metrics themselves. Instead of percent segments retransmitted, for example, you might choose total bytes sent. I said that this workspace displays information about the active TCP connections on this LPAR, as shown in the table at the bottom. Well, maybe you don't want to see all connections. Maybe you'd like to filter out the unwanted ones. So going to the next slide. To do that, you would right-click on the link for a selected row, and then click on Filtered TCP/IP Connection Data. And let's go to slide 36 now. The filter criteria dialog is displayed with the address and port values from the selected row. Now, a user can override any of the filter criteria that are in this dialog box, but then you would click OK, and you'll get a view, the filtered TCP/IP connection data summary, showing only the data that matches the filter criteria. Going to slide 37 now. The inactive TCP/IP connections workspace displays information about the most recent inactive connections for this LPAR that you specified to keep on DASD. Here we see things like the local and remote addresses and ports for a connection, the time when it started and when it ended, the connection ID, the total bytes received, and more. To specify which inactive connections to keep on DASD, you would use the tcpcon define and start commands or their CNM style equivalents. Going to slide 38 now. The NetView command response workspace has been redesigned to make it more readable and more usable. From this workspace, the user can issue any NetView line mode command and see the results here. Moving to slide 39, the NetView tasks workspace provides information about the health of NetView tasks. The table at the bottom lists all the NetView tasks and provides information about the health of each one, such as its CPU utilization, storage usage, input message rate, and so on. The graphics at the top show tasks that have exceeded customizable thresholds for CPU utilization and storage usage. In this case, none were exceeding the CPU threshold, but several were exceeding the storage usage threshold. To see details and trends for a specific task, click on the link in the row for that task. So let's go to slide 40. Five views show performance metrics for the selected task over time: its CPU usage, its storage usage, its message queue count, inbound and outbound message rates, and I/O rate. This provides a quick and easy way to spot trends in task performance. The data in this workspace is provided using historical data collection. And on slide 41, speaking of historical data collection, real-time and historical data are both available in the NetView workspaces as listed in this slide. After historical data is configured, enabled, and collected, you can display historical reports, which are useful in finding the root cause of problems that evolved over a period of time and in debugging problems that occurred in a prior time period. Capacity planners can also use historical reports to identify trends and correct imbalances in network load distribution. So moving on, slide 42, we'll start looking at product integration. Slide 43, NetView provides a Discovery Library Adapter, or DLA, to collect information from its ROTM data cache about IP resources that we're managing and their relationships. The DLA formats that data and sends it to IBM's Configuration Management Database, or CMDB. DLAs from other products provide resource information as well. For example, the ZOS DLA provides detailed system data about the system where it's running. Going to slide 44, let's look at some of this data. NetView provides breadth of information based on the network resources it's managing. In this example, based on an actual DLA run, we have information on 281 computer systems, 316 IPv4 addresses, 5 ZOS systems, and you can see the other here. In contrast, the ZOS DLA provides depth of information for the system where it's running. In this case, one computer system, one IPv4 address, one ZOS system, and so on. And by the way, these tallies were both made using the IDML browse tool, which is available both with the ZOS DLA, and it's also free on Tivoli's Open Process Automation Library, or OPAL. Going to slide 45 now. Having data in CMDB from multiple products allows for the reconciliation of that information by a product such as Tivoli's Application Dependency Discovery Manager, or TADM, to provide a more complete picture of managed resources from multiple perspectives, as well as their relationships to one another. For example, here we see a system named NMP196. Information about it was provided by both NetView and the ZOS DLA, and it's organized by TADM in tabs for a consolidated picture of that system. There's general information, there's IP information, ParmLib information, runtime, and so on. Okay, going to slide 46. The NetView DLA can be run on one centralized NetView for ZOS installation that collects data in its ROTEM data cache from other NetView installations and from multiple distributed NetView agents. Or if your enterprise distributes its TCP/IP topology information across multiple NetView installations, each of which maintains a ROTEM data cache, then the DLA can be deployed at any or all of those NetView installations. Going on now, slide 47, product integration. We've also added additional integration with the OmegaMon product suite, and we'll take a look at that. We'll go on to slide 49 now. NetView 5.2 took the first steps toward cross-product integration with bidirectional correlated links with OmegaMon XC for mainframe networks. NetView 5.3 significantly expands this cross-product integration with links to the OmegaMon products that are listed here, creating a consolidated management console for availability and performance in the TEP. Going to slide 50, this slide illustrates the linkage between NetView and the OmegaMon products. So, for example, if a user notices a problem with an IP connection on the NetView TCP/IP connection data workspace, he can then, through a simple click, go to OmegaMon XC for mainframe networks to see the performance characteristics of that connection, or to OmegaMon XC for CICS to see the performance impact of that problem on a KIX region. Or conversely, the user of OmegaMon XC for IMS who notices a performance problem could link to NetView in context to see if that performance problem is caused by an availability problem. So let's look at one example. Going to slide 51, we start on NetView's TCP/IP connection data workspace, and we see several connections in the table at the bottom. If we noted a problem with one of these connections and wanted to investigate its performance impact, we could click on the link for that connection. So let's use the first connection as an example. And going to the next slide, we see the links available in this context, including links to OmegaMon for mainframe networks, for CICS, or for ZOS. So let's click on the link for mainframe networks. And going to the next slide, here we have the OmegaMon for mainframe networks TCP Connections Link Workspace for the connection that we selected. Note that it took only one click to get here. We didn't have to go through a navigation tree or any other workspaces. So here, we can see the performance characteristics for this connection. For example, in this case, its response time variance, the graphic at the top center, exceeds a customizable threshold, indicating a performance problem with this connection. Okay, going on, we also have command authorization with NetView. On slide 55, for OmegaMon agents that don't have their own command handler, command authorization for executing MVS commands is available through NetView's command authorization services. The TEP user ID is used as the basis for authorization checking, and if the user is authorized, the command is executed under that NetView operator. Command output is logged in the NetView log, and so provides an audit trail of who did what. This solution applies only to agents running on ZOS, and NetView for ZOS must reside on the same LPAR as the OmegaMon agent and or the TIMS. Going to slide 56, this solution is available for the OmegaMon agents that are listed here with appropriate PTFs applied. I won't go through them, but the PTFs are listed in the next couple of slides, and you can look over those if you're interested. So going on to slide 59 now. Here's an example, the NetView log, showing a couple of commands and their responses logged here. So as I said, you have a way of seeing who did what, an audit trail. Going to slide 60, similarly in the NetView log as viewed in the TEP. Okay, going to slide 61, we'll take a look at some core functions that have been enhanced, starting with dynamic pipelines. Slide 62. Some commands, when they're run in a pipe, do not return control to the pipe until the command completes. This means that no output from the command can be obtained until the command successfully completes. And in fact, a command that terminates abnormally returns no data at all. Dynamic pipelines allow for the return of intermediate output for commands. The function is available through new options on the pipe persist stage, the attach command, and the trap CList command. An example is included in sample CNMS 1101. We believe that the pipe version of this function will see wide usage. The changes to the pipe persist stage provide methods to access correlated command responses through the trap queue processed by message read. A REX procedure can use view with the extend option to do other processing or to exercise control of a wait command while correlated command responses are returned. NetView itself utilizes this new function in order to allow for intermediate responses from the NetView ping and traceroute commands, so there will be no need to wait for those commands to complete before seeing any results. Okay, going on, we'll look now at command response suppression. On slide 64, because responses to some commands, especially TCP/IP related commands, can be lengthy or repetitious, and customers have in fact complained about the volume of responses to piped commands being in the syslog, NetView now provides a means to specify whether eligible messages are sent to the system log. Eligible messages are responses to MVS commands that are issued from within NetView or from other message traffic naming a console owned by a NetView operator. System logging of all other messages is not affected. This function is implemented with a new option. It looks like SLOG Commander, actually means System Log Command Responses. It's available on the defaults and override commands. Default SLOG Commander sets the default behavior for the NetView where it is issued, and it specifies whether eligible command responses are sent to the system log. The default value for Slog Commander is yes, meaning that command responses are sent to the system log. Override Slog Commander has a similar meaning and could be used to override a default setting. So going on now, we'll look at NLDM's PIU formatting. On slide 66, in prior releases, SNA PIUs were displayed in hex and EBCDIC. NetView 5.3 adds function to interpret certain PIUs and display the information in a readable format. So from the NLDM session trace data panel, for example, if the user enters a number to select a PIU, today he would see the PIU displayed in hex and EBCDIC form. If he enters the selection number followed by an F, the formatted PIU is displayed, as we'll see on the next slide. So on slide 67, here we have that formatted SNA PIU. We see the hex encoding of each field in the PIU, along with annotation that explains each field. Now, notice that some fields are too long to be fully displayed here, and they end in dot, dot, dot. So go to the next slide now, 68. To see the complete hex for a field that ends with dot, 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 enter set hex on, enter that command, and this results in a familiar dump formatted display of the PIU. So going on now, there are a few miscellaneous enhancements I want to mention. And going to slide 70, check for CList existence. Until this release, NetView, when it was asked to execute a CList, would first check the user's authority to issue the CList. If the user was authorized, we would then execute the CList. Sounds good, right? The problem comes when the CList doesn't exist. Maybe it truly doesn't exist, or maybe the user just made a typo when they entered the command. No big deal, right? Right, except that the authorization check results in a no, this user is not authorized to issue this command from RACF or other SAF product. And that response can cause SMF to cut a security violation record, a false positive. So, in NetView 5.3, we've changed the order of processing to first confirm that the CList does in fact exist, and then check the user's authorization. This eliminates the false positive security violation SMF records in this context. Now, remote command connections. Prior to this release, the remote end of a remote command connection could sometimes be unaware of connection disruption, and so it would reject attempts to reestablish the connection because it thought the connection was still in place. Now, NetView allows remote command connections over IP to be reestablished automatically if the connection between the source and target is disrupted. And finally, AON execs. Prior to NetView 5.2, these execs were shipped as source code, thus allowing customers to make their own modifications or to turn on tracing when needed for debugging. In NetView 5.2, these were shipped only in compiled form. But now, by popular demand, they are once again shipped as source code. So going to slide 71 now. The next few slides here describe other sources that you can go to for more information about NetView, including classes, other webinars, websites, and other places. I won't take the time to go through these, but you can read through them at your leisure. So with that, I'll conclude by saying thank you for being with us today. I hope this has been informative. And now I'll turn it back to the operator.
Thank you, Larry. Now we'd like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a live Q&A session with the presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time that you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. Our first question, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. Or if it was low, press star 3. Please stand by while we allow everyone a chance to respond. Question 2, was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference? If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. Or if it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. Again, please stand by while we allow everyone a chance to respond. Question 3. Do you plan to implement NetView data with Tivoli Enterprise Portal? If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. Our final question for today. We hope that you have enjoyed the teleconference. Please let us know if you are interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. That concludes our survey. Thank you all for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask a question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad. At this time, I'll turn the call back over to Larry while we wait for questions.
Okay, well, I hope you've enjoyed today's presentation, found it useful. If you do later think of questions you'd like to send to me, my email address is on the title slide of this presentation, so you could just pass along any questions to me that way as well.
And ladies and gentlemen, again, that is star 1 for questions. screen, it appears there are no questions.
Okay. All right. Well, I thank you for being with us today. Hope this has been informative for you. And like I say, if you do think of questions later you'd like to send along, send them to my email on the title slide of the presentation.
And that does conclude today's teleconference. Thank you very much for your participation, and have a wonderful day.